Perhaps we can just read quickly together the our refuge. Are you able to do it in Tibetan? Are you able to do it in Spanish? This was just a joke. The German, perhaps? Sangye Jodan Soge Chongnam La Changju Badu Dani Gyapsu Chi Dagi Chinso Gibe Tsonam Gi Dola Penji Sangye Drupa Shum. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and the other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. Did somebody become enlightened over lunchtime? Did you have any? Did you maybe see some question in your coffee cup? Okay. Come as a second, huh? No, I think. No, you're thinking of the movie Gone in 60 Seconds. That's different. Well, also animals, they have manifest intention. So no, the intention doesn't depend on the ability to to overly conceptualize. If you think about sometimes some of the worst karmas, they come about because of the strong like for example, because of strong anger, such as wrath. It's where the person doesn't think at all anymore. So also animals, I mean, animals they can't, animals are very cruel to each other. Okay. Yep. That's true. That's difficult. So how relevant this is here or not, that needs to be investigated. But I was anyway going to also point out the difference between positive karmic imprints and karma. So because we always mistake, I think very often karma gets mixed up with the karmic imprints. But that what goes from life to life, they're really the karmic imprints, not the karma itself. And it's more like the karmic potential. So, I mean, that maybe one can relate to that through the listening of mantras, through the hearing of mantras, that A, the karma of that animal would be purified, and that it also leaves an imprint on the mind. So that's, that I can be there. And then these examples like with the donkey helping to build the stupa. I mean, just helping to build a stupa by itself, that doesn't necessarily purify. Because if the person gets angry about it, they even create non-virtuous karma. So, but there are aspects. That's one. Another thing to think about is when it says intent. But I don't think it always means necessarily the coarse intent, that we form in our mind. Because, for example, one wouldn't. Sometimes, for example, somebody is drawn to Buddhism due to karma, without necessarily, particularly formalizing it in the mind. So that the mind being drawn there, it just happens on a subtle level, without the mind, without the person necessarily conceptualizing it in the mind. And also the mental factor of intent is an ever-present mental factor that comes with each group of main mind and mental factors. And we have lots of those groups going on in our continuum all the time. And they're not necessarily always the very coarse, I want to do this or I want to do that type of intent. It's more like a subtle type of mental factor that pulls the mind into a certain direction. So with these examples, with the stupa and so forth, so one thing is the power of the object. So it comes about through the power of the object, not so much through the intent of the person. So then in how far there is actually karma in that sense of the mental factor of intent. That's hard to say. That's hard to say. Because it's also, on a subtle level, I mean, definitely, so there is something happening. So one has a powerful object, and so the animal, is not volitionally, but is still, engaged into the process of helping to build that, a holy object. So there's some kind of subtle relationship. So that it would leave an imprint on the mind, and that it can purify the karma of the animal, so that, I mean, that one can see, I think. But that's true. There are some more difficult aspects of karma. So, did the lama mean, or it purifies the karma of the animal, or they actually accumulate merit? Well, it would leave through the power of the object, it leaves a positive imprint on the mind. But that's also, so we can separate between karma, and the imprints on the mind. So maybe then, if we separate those two, then maybe it becomes easier. No. Karma is the mental factor of intent at the time of the action. Not just before, like we said before, that which initiates the action, and then accompanies the action, the mental factor of intent, and then that leaves a karmic potential on the mental consciousness. And then that karmic potential on the mental consciousness, that goes from life to life. But that is, strictly speaking, not karma. That is the karmic potential. So, like, also, sorry, just one, like, one has to learn to think a little bit more in a differentiated manner. So, for example, it is said if we recite mantras, like the Medicine Buddha mantra to somebody at the time of death, so then they cannot take rebirth in a lower realm. But so we know, one cannot experience karma that one has not generated oneself. So we cannot generate for the animal the karma to be reborn in a higher realm. So they have the karma to be reborn in a higher realm, and it just through the force of the mantra, so then they can take rebirth there, like that. Sure, very famous. The fly. Or a pig, yeah, okay. The different versions, yeah. Yeah, that story is usually given as in the context of that characteristic of karma not dissipating by itself. So that this teeny tiny merit had endured, for many, many eons. So it is explained in the context of karma. So yes, so there would be the idea. Yes, so there would be, which is karma had been created by the animal going by the, like the pig in this context or whatever. Anyway, just being sort of without intent to create virtue, just somehow going around the stupa. through the force of the through the power of the object. So the power of the object comes about through a dependent arising. So for example, you know, there are prayers where the Bodhisattva prays, and also, you know, we pray, you know, like, in the, for example, in the future, you know, may sentient beings' karma be purified merely by hearing my name. So there's there's a dependent arising. And so it's not just, you know, so the Bodhisattvas, they have been, you know, dedicating, you know, lots and lots and lots of merits towards that. With stupas, it is, you know, stupas is a little bit different. To be honest, it is questionable, you know, just because somebody builds something, you know, in this particular shape, that would make it an holy object. So that would be questionable in my mind, because there's a very elaborated process, you know, for blessing the stupa. Similarly, you know, to blessing the statues. So, and very interestingly, one main ingredient also in blessing the statues, you know, blessing stupas, is always to have, you know, representation of verbal dharma there. So even if it is just one tiny roll of a mantra, so then that makes it special because you have dharma in there. So it's also there is a dependent arising. So it's not just because one has something in that shape, then that alone would make it a holy object. So in fact, also with statues, I mean, there are two traditions, like Lama Sopa Rinpoche. You know, he is very, he transforms everything, you know, everything is the Dharmakaya. So, you know, so every statue, every stupa is an emanation of the Dharmakaya. But in general, like in the monastery, it's not seen like that. In the monastery, it's more seen, actually the stupa, also the statue, becomes only really a holy object suitable to be placed on the altar after it has been blessed. So there's also a dependent arising there. So there's a dependent, yeah. And so karma, that is definitely explained, that, you know, karma depends also on the object. So the strength of karma. So for example, the strength of our anger may be the same, but if the anger is directed, you know, at a bodhisattva, then the karma is much, much heavier than if it is directed, you know, at a non-bodhisattva. Yeah, no.
Karma.
No. Yeah, that, I mean, so, you know, because the Bodhisattva is a Bodhisattva, so that is conventional reality. And so then becoming angry at the Bodhisattva because of the purity of the object, it creates more negative karma. Oh, of course, it benefits that sentient being. No. That's you know, don't confuse that. The Bodhisattva cannot create karma for the sentient being. No, but Bodhisattvas definitely what Bodhisattvas do is, I mean, that's I've observed, you know, myself. This, you know, they take extra care, so that other sentient beings don't get angry at them. But in the end, you know, everybody's actions, they're their own responsibility. So if other sentient beings get angry, that is not the fault of the Bodhisattva. I mean, the Bodhisattvas, they will, you know, from their side, act as much as possible so that the other sentient beings don't get angry. But it's like Shantideva says, you know, in the end, you know, it's like Shantideva, he says, oh, with worldly beings, no matter what you do, they're going to get angry. So, you know, there's quotes where he says, so if you say something, like the, you know, the worldly beings, so they want to have an argument. So you don't say anything, they get angry. So you say something, they get angry. So no matter what you do, you know, so. But in the end, still, so the Bodhisattva from their side, you know, their motivation will be to help that sentient being. No, it's better. Don't get angry at the Bodhisattva. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, sometimes then they say, oh, because of the karmic relationship, because still one establishes some kind of karmic relationship, you know, which then enables the Bodhisattva to, or the Buddha even, to, you know, to lead us to enlightenment. But that still doesn't neglect, you know, that doesn't counteract the effect. So karma is not something that, you know, is determined by the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. It's like a law of nature. It's like a law of nature. So, like the Buddha explained in the scriptures, so there, you know, so many examples how powerful the Dharma can be. So, you know, how one can even accumulate just with one prostration, one can accumulate, you know, this infinite amount of merit. And then comes the inevitable question, well, if that is true, then why are sentient beings, you know, still not enlightened, most of them? And then the answer is, well, because even though they engage, sentient beings engage into practices to accumulate merit, and those merits are very powerful, they immediately afterwards, they, how you say, they what's, not annihilate, but yeah, anyway, so they undo those merits because of getting angry. So in our practice, on the one hand, the accumulation of virtue, that is good. But that is completely useless if we are constantly undoing it with anger. So, you know, making that's why they say, you know, there's no negativity like anger, and there's no austerity like patience. So that's really meant like that, you know, because patience is the antidote against anger. So, and we need patience because otherwise we undo, you know, we engage into the very, very powerful practices to attain enlightenment, but we undo the positive effect, you know, all the time because of anger. So it's, you know, becomes a little bit pointless. So one needs to have patience. So this, we need to meditate, and that's why it's so important. So we need to meditate, you know, on a happy mind, and then on patience. That's a very essential. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's what is explained. Yes. So if one dedicates the merits to complete enlightenment. So I don't think it's just any dedication, it's a dedication to complete enlightenment. Okay.
But a Sangha member who is doing so much for the community and, you know, taking so much responsibility, that she said honestly she was angry many times per day. And I could understand that if I was in a position. In fact, I couldn't even do what she did. It would not be possible for me. But if I were, I would certainly be getting angry. So I thought that was, you know, that raised a little question in my mind.
Well, we don't know the other, you know, they may just be more honest than ourselves. So they may just, you know, they may just notice very small instances of anger and regard them, you know, as anger. So that's, you know, that's, we don't know how they mean that.